Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturdays.
Okay, it's Anna David here with After Party Pod, the podcast all about addiction and recovery. If you're new to the show, I welcome you with open arms and an open heart, because that is what recovery is about, right? I try really hard not to be earnest, but I said it in a very not earnest way. Anyway, so yeah, I'm recording this. It's the Friday afternoon, late afternoon before the holiday madness starts. Madness, I don't know. It's really empty and a little creepy around this office, but that's what's going to happen. I don't know. I got a little holiday blues this week. I was really proud of myself because, I mean, well, truthfully, and I don't mean to jinx myself, this has been a really good year. And I figured I'm going to ride that through the holidays. It's, you know, it's holiday blues. Like, what's that? Then it started to set in a little bit this week. It's definitely just, God, that compare and despair thing. And that, I don't know, you guys. Do you know? Anyway, what do I have to tell you? I do want to talk about, before I get to the guest, I do want to talk about some emails, because they've been so nice and so good. And I wanted to call out to an email we got about the Patty Powers episode. She heard us talking about the Hyenas Hookers and the program that Patty is involved in, and she lives there, and so she wants to get involved, which is amazing. And she talks about this podcast in her support groups, which I love. And by the way, I got another one. This was on Facebook, where a lovely girl called this the best podcast of the year. Yep. You heard it here. And that she shared about it in her meeting, which is awesome. God, I love that. And then another one from a wonderful woman who lives in the Bay Area, which is where I'm from and where I'm going next week. And guess what? We're going to go hang out, go to a meeting together. What do you think of that? Whenever I go home, I don't know what you guys do, but I go home and I become a blob. I mean, I eat and I regress and I go nowhere, don't shower. I mean, I guess all the telltale signs of a depression, but it's just weird. I don't really do self-care. And I used to go to meetings when I would go home, but I kind of hated them. You know, I didn't know the good ones, and I don't buy into that. There's no such thing as a bad meeting, because I've been to plenty. And so, you know, she and I were emailing, and I just sort of thought, she lives there. She's going to know about good meetings. So that's going to happen. That's exciting. I'll tell you guys about it next time. Now, my guest today is Aaron Akins, a very talented musician who I have known through most of my sobriety. His bio is about 3 pages, so I can't summarize it, but go to his website, God Made Women Beautiful, and learn more about Aaron Akins. I'm trying. Okay, God Made Women Beautiful was considered for a Grammy. Yeah. He's been a featured performer at the annual Music Benefit Concert and Awards Gala of the American Society of Young Musicians, which is a sentence that's hard to say without taking a breath in the middle. And he's worked with all sorts of impressive people. And he's got an interesting story. And, you know, the thing about him, he doesn't come across as a funny guy upon first glance. I've always found him really funny. And it's, we get into that. Like, why do I find him funny when he's not trying to be funny? And there are all sorts of people that are trying to be funny. But there's something about the way he talks. He's very matter of fact, and he always seems to be a little bit surprised by his alcoholic thinking when he shouldn't be. I hear him talk about it every day, you know, but that's how it goes. So anyway, happy holidays, you guys. Oh, God, I think I'm going to release this after the new year. Ha, we're through it. wasn't so bad. Anyway, whenever this is released, thanks for listening. This is Erin Akins.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like bloodstains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
So, Erin, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
I've known you for years now.
Yeah.
How long has it been?
I know it's been over 10 years.
No, it hasn't been over 10 years.
Yeah, it's been, yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
So, we met when we had around the same amount of time. We're going to go into the whole thing.
Right.
And I always found you to be a very wise and yet funny person when talking about
recovery. Shocked by that.
I know you're always shocked by that. Every time I tell you, you're shocked.
Yeah, and I was just telling my best friend who's like really close to me, I said, there's this girl, her name is Anna, and she thinks I'm funny.
But you are. Because it's like you're not trying to be. You're definitely not trying to be. But you have this ironic way of talking about this. It's almost like, you know how you're constantly surprised that I tell you I think you're funny?
Yeah.
It's
because
like
I'm genuinely
trying to be.
No, I mean I don't know if it's because I don't know if it's because you're so cute and I think, well, it's Anna who's super cute who's telling me she's funny and now I'm like
I don't know. So well, here's my point. Yeah. Here's my point. You are shocked every time I say it. It's like you've never heard it before.
Have you noticed I'm shocked every time?
Every time.
I'm genuinely not even playing. I'm shocked.
No, I know. And I feel like maybe that's what I find so interesting and kind of amusing about the way you talk about recovery, because it's like you're shocked every time you have a realization about our disease. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm also just surprised that you recognize that, because I don't... Although we don't know each other well at all. We know each other, but it's not like we hung out, seriously. We've chatted in passing, but yeah. I think I'm just surprised that you picked that up, because I have had people in the past say, dude, you're... Because my friend is actually a comedian, professionally. Right. I'm a professional singer-songwriter.
And actor, yeah. Yeah.
Why don't I ever... See,
because
that's
you're
thing.
Constantly shocked by this stuff that you already know. I mean, there's something about the way you talk. Like, there are a lot of things you've said that stick in my mind. And I think they're funny, too, because I relate to them. Like, I remember you talking once about how... you had like something you brought your sponsor or whatever, and then you started to think, well, I don't think he likes me very much. You know, in fact, I think he hates me or whatever.
And it's so weird that just yesterday he asked me if I would do him a favor and speak at this big...
Yeah, meeting.
Can we use...
Whatever you want to
use. We can use profanity?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Really? Thanks so much. That helps me out so much because that's, you know... 3/4 of my vocabulary is from profanity.
I've never heard you. I don't think you swear that much.
No, I actually don't. But I.
But you want to right now and feel
I
free.
I want to. Yeah, I. It would make me feel.
You feel comfortable. That's what we want.
To be able.
Okay, so now that we've had all this build up, what are you going to? How are you going to swear?
I probably won't. I just.
Okay. You just wanted the freedom.
I just wanted to know that I could.
Yeah.
Because I'm invariably, it's going to come out.
Yeah, and you don't want to feel weird. Point. Yeah. So
I just didn't want your fans to go, man, he sure cursed a lot.
Yeah, why is she having that swearer on?
What kind of guests do you have in here?
There are plenty of people who swear, including myself. Although, I'll tell you.
I don't know if I... I haven't heard... A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, and it's always cute, like. Like, great. Anna, that's so great. You're swearing.
The guy I've been seeing mentioned the other day that I say the F word a lot. He's like, it's not bad. I've just noticed you say it. And so I've made an effort in the last couple of days.
Really?
Yeah.
But does it bother him?
No. It's just like, I just noticed. Yeah. Not swearing in general, just
like,
the F word.
You know, I'll stop hanging around Erin and I'll stop saying the F word. It's rubbing off.
I feel that when you share and talk, you think very deliberately about your words. Wouldn't you say that's true?
I am still, once again, surprised. At you, Anna. I'm very shocked and surprised. Maybe you're paying more attention than...
Than you think I am.
Than I think, maybe.
I'll tell you, I'm not going to make this about me at all, because no? It's about you.
I'm going to continue to throw it right back about you, no matter how much you make it about
Look,
me.
Look, that's my dream come true, so it's fine. But, like, I'll tell you something. I am very not visually oriented. I will meet people over and over again. I don't remember their face. Like, I don't remember directions. I am so tuned, because all my attention is on what people say and how they talk and how I'm interpreting it. So I think I picked that up with a lot of people. I mean, that's just sort of what I do. I wish I could have it more visual. You know what I mean?
I'm so honored that you asked me to come here and talk to you.
Yeah.
Because it's just different. That's all I can say.
What do you mean?
Once again, it's just surprising.
Okay. What would life be like if you weren't constantly surprised?
Life would be like a person who's not constantly surprised. I mean, I think it is what it is. It sounds like I'm constantly surprised.
You're not.
I'm not. I think I live in a lot of intrigue.
Yeah.
Like, I'm intrigued a lot.
Yeah.
And especially now, because I had some experience with sobriety before.
Yeah.
As you know.
Yeah.
And now I'm having a totally different experience with it.
Let's talk about that.
Well, I believe that when you can't hear something until you can hear it.
Yep.
Which is another shocking thing. I'm hearing a lot more. I think it's because I'm using certain specific tools to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess this is talk about everything.
Just God, talk about everything.
Including God.
Yeah, as much as you want.
Well, I include God with, I ask God to let me hear. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't I just ask him, let me hear what Anna is asking me right now, God, so we can have a good rapport here.
Yeah.
If you direct my thinking,
right,
my thoughts, my ideas, I can go on emotions, feelings,
right,
spirit, God, to let me hear what Anna's saying, if she so decides to ask me a question now that I'm here being interviewed by her.
Right. Does it happen that automatically? Is that maybe why I think you're a very deliberate speaker, because you're sort of pausing and asking for guidance and help before you speak?
I think this particular time around, as opposed to last time, I do it a lot, because there's something in our program,
mm-hmm,
that says we have a warped mind.
Mm-hmm.
It says glass in hand, I warp my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, okay, so let me wrap my head around this warped mind thing,
mm-hmm,
right? So what about a warped record? Let's kind of use an example of what a warped mind would be like.
Right.
A warped record, when the old school warped albums, when you put the needle on it. Or in the sun, if it gets warped. If it gets warped like that, it won't play.
Right.
But if it's warped, I think when the needle is on, it will go in the groove, and then it'll skip when it gets to the warped side.
Yeah.
Or it just won't play.
Right.
Nonetheless, it doesn't work.
Right.
And so, womp womp, I have a mind that's been warped by alcohol and drugs.
Right.
And now it doesn't work, except with what we know as divine, how is it used?
Not intervention.
Not divine intervention, but a power. We need a power greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
There's another way of saying it, though.
It's okay. The way you said it is good. Makes sense.
It's just that I need a power to... For me, I believe to hear things and to read things.
Mm-hmm.
And so just on my own warped mind, I can't. How could I hear or read or understand if the mind is not working?
Right.
That's the question at large.
Do you believe the mind ever starts working correctly?
With the power, I believe.
Only with the power, even 15 years.
For me.
Yeah.
For me, with what I have, which I call alcoholism,
mm-hmm,
Only with the power.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you have to connect with that?
Right now.
Every second?
There is one who has all power.
Yeah.
That one is God. Watch, wait for it. May you find him now.
Right.
Why now?
Right.
What is now? Uh-oh, now is now.
Yeah.
Some wise ass says now is now.
Yeah.
So right now, you and I are sitting across from each other.
Yeah.
Right?
But you have to have moments and hours where you're not able to do that because there's just not time.
The old not time. So how long does it take to to say, God, can I be with you?
But every and direct second, my thing? You're not doing that every second. That's impossible. Or maybe you are.
I'm doing it a lot more than I have before.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm human. I forget. Mm-hmm. Because a part of our disease is forgetting, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? There's a big, you know, it's been even said, for ism, incredibly short memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention, for ism, I sabotage myself.
You know, I've never heard that.
You haven't?
No.
I know you like it, though, don't
I
you?
I do like it a
have
lot.
Have you ever sabotaged anything?
Oh, okay,
I don't think so. You don't look like you have. Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because that's the thing. It's weird. I was telling somebody today, there's a sober friend of mine who works in this office, and he came by, and I was telling him just that I'm so, my alcoholic thinking has been so at bay for a long time, and it's back these last couple of days with a vengeance, and it's brutal.
Yeah,
it's there every second, and I want to tear everything down because everything seems, even though I know it isn't, horrible.
Yeah, that's the cunning, baffling, and powerful.
Yeah.
Because you've had some great things happen in your life, right?
Many. And I'm having great things happen right now. It doesn't mean the alcoholic thinking
goes away.
There. Yeah.
It's there, and therefore that's a good idea to go to the power now, because even today the first thing you said was when I walked up was you were kind of going through something.
Yeah. Well, it's just been one of these nightmares. I had a virus on my computer. I went to Verizon to buy this thing, and I didn't have my ID because I left it here because I got a moving violation that I had to deal with. I mean, it's just been sort of one thing after another.
See, what I feel about this one thing after another thing is I know how that works. If I stub my toe and I go, what fuck?
Yeah.
Right? Now, that energy, I put that energy out in vibration.
Yes.
And all day, I'm just... stuff's happening.
So true.
I have to nip that in the bud right away. That's a whole nother thing I'm doing. This whole vibrational, high vibrational thing.
Yeah.
Just trying to stay feeling good. Whatever it takes. If that means...
Okay, please stop doing that. Seriously.
Yeah, no. It's freaky. I know. It freaked you out.
It was a little loud, yeah.
It was a little loud.
It's okay. It's okay. You need to do that.
But it made me...
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird that you
stop doing that.
It's weird you should say that because I was, you know, kind of having all this stuff go on this morning, and I went to the Verizon store and I couldn't get a spun front in the rain and da da da. And I was like, they may not be open because it was 9:30, and I started to get all spun and I was like, okay, so that's your biggest problem?
Right.
That you may have to come back later?
Right.
And, you know, I was able to
they
sort of be
that
like...
They call that King Baby, Dr. Harry Tebow.
Yeah.
Who's mentioned in the back of the big book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He studied the first 100 alcoholics, and he was Bill Wilson's friend when Bill Wilson started Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, yeah.
And he asked Bill Wilson if he could study the first 100 alcoholics. He said yes. And what Dr. Harry Tebow found out about alcoholics collectively is they all have what's called a king baby.
Mm-hmm.
They want what they want when they want it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they don't get what they want, they act like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You have any experience with that?
None. When I had to go to court last week for this traffic thing, mm-hmm. I was like so upset. And then I had this epiphany. I was like, oh, this is what people do. They go to they don't get spun out. They just go to traffic court.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it is this, like, alcoholism I do feel like is this, like, but I can't deal with that.
Right.
You know?
You're not like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah,
King You're Baby. Not a worker among workers.
So let's talk about the first time that you did drugs and drank and all that stuff.
The first, very first
yeah.
time?
Yeah.
Like the very first time?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not sure if I remember the
That's
first time.
Right.
I remember when I was about 16, mm-hmm. And I had older I have older brothers, mm-hmm. and they kind of drank.
Mm-hmm.
I watched them drink, so I kind of wanted to be like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I don't want to age myself, but Wild Irish Rose was the
okay,
just the bullshit cheap as wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember drinking, like, they used to call them bricks. It was like a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I drank, if not all of that, most of it. And I just fell out on my buddy's couch in his basement, and they just left me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just there
mm-hmm.
Sleeping it off.
Mm-hmm.
So that was should have been a sign, but no.
But did you wake up the next morning and go, that was fun, I want to do that again?
No. I didn't think that deeply about it.
Yeah.
I just thought I was drunk and
yeah.
I drank too much.
Yeah.
So I didn't really relate that to, oh, I might be an alcoholic.
But you thought it was fun or you wouldn't have done it again.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, because I was only 16. I just thought this is what kids do.
Yeah. And then when did you start doing it regularly?
Always.
Really?
Well, I mean, I've always drank, but, I went through high school. I played sports. I was the captain of my high school team.
Uh-huh.
But we would drink after practice.
Yeah, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. I went to college. I played college-level basketball. I, was in the music department. I got a degree in music business. Mm-hmm. And so I've always kind of drank
mm-hmm.
and did a little drugs.
And when did the drugs start in?
The drugs started after... Well, there was a little drugs the whole time, but not seriously.
Like
not,
pot.
Pot?
Pot. You know what pot is.
Marijuana?
Yeah.
Yeah, I smoked pot.
So when did you get into the harder drugs?
I think about 1990
mm-hmm.
is when I first smoked crack.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say that?
Oh, yes, my God. You're supposed to say
I'm
that.
Supposed to talk... And let everybody know, Aaron.
Are you cool with that?
Wonderful, Aaron. I'm just a good person who smoked crack before.
So are hundreds of people I know.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we can keep this more, on the general tip if you don't want to get specific about it. I can find it fascinating.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah. So
I don't do it anymore, so go ahead and judge me if you want to.
I'm not judging.
Not you. Thing. I'm kind of talking to the listeners.
You know who does not judge?
Who?
The listeners. This helps them, whether they are themselves.
Oh, I should tell them some of the incredible things. Now that I told them I experienced crack.
Yeah.
I should tell them some of the awesome things that's going on.
Tell them some of the awesome
should
things.
Should I?
Yeah.
Well... Let's see. I recently performed at Martha's Vineyard,
mm-hmm.
and that was awesome. I had to fly into Boston and then take a 9-seat plane into the island.
Yeah. See, yeah, I've only taken the boat in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You took the ferry.
Yeah.
I took the ferry coming back.
Yeah.
But I went ahead and experienced. It was raining and it was nighttime
yeah.
when I made it in, and it was not. It was. I have to be honest. It was a little scary.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've been in small planes in the rain at night. It's freaking terrifying.
It's scary, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so let's talk about your music, because you're a very accomplished musician, and I want them to know. Tell me about your music career.
Well, it's a lot to talk about.
We're
going to
condense it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's see if some... Recently, I perform at the House of Blues a lot.
Yeah.
And I just recently did, for the first time, I did a one-man show that I wrote on Nat King Cole.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just recently did that.
Cool.
And as a result of that, I actually got booked in Berkeley, California, starting in the middle of January for about 3 or 4 weekends to run it. And then if it works out, then they'll just, we'll just continue it.
Great.
But that's one of the things that happened recently.
And you wrote a one-man show about Nat King Cole, and you play Nat King Cole, and you play his music.
I sing. It's mostly how his music affects me and how I resonate with it and how I started singing it and what it means to me and what he means to me and that kind of thing. I don't actually get the process, the way he wore his hair, which was a conk. It was called conk, like process. I don't know if you're old enough to know what I mean, but process is like they would put some kind of, you know, like some kind of texture, something in the hair to make it look straight. And they called it a process.
Okay, so you what didn't do that.
I don't do that.
But that does, we're,
not important.
Okay.
I don't do that.
Okay.
I'm myself, and I'm basically, I don't even emulate him.
Right.
I just have a natural timbre in my voice that sounds like Nat King Cole when I sing that style. But I actually write songs, and I do R&B, pop, soul, urban, everything.
And we'll link to your website and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. My website is called God Made Women Beautiful.
I noticed that this morning when I was looking you up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
that's a song I wrote.
Yeah.
And all that started with the song, being inspired to write a song called God Made Women Beautiful. And that's my way of being of service. You know, we learn in the program to be of service. And I was inspired to write the song. And after I wrote the song, I decided to do a movement, meaning find women that are that I consider beautiful because of their characteristics, like honesty and consideration and stuff like that. You know, qualities that it's not about how women look. It's really about me trying to remind women that they're beautiful just by the nature of them being connected to God or being a piece of God, to be exact. The way I feel is that they're a piece of God. Like if God was an apple and you take a bite of that apple, the woman would be that bite. So it would be still the same elements. So it would be impossible to not be beautiful. So it's not so much about how you look, although you happen to be blessed with good looks and have good qualities.
Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah.
So I would love to sort of couch this in how sobriety and recovery helped you get these things, because I think a lot of people are inspired by the careers, you know, sober people are able to build once they clean up, you know?
Absolutely. I think just by virtue of not drinking and doing drugs, there's some kind of natural connection that you have, but when you're clear in your thinking, you can make better decisions.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you can also make bad decisions when you're when you're sober as well.
Yeah.
So a part of the process is learning to use a higher power to think better.
Yeah.
Thoughts.
Like we were just talking about.
Right.
And so how has sobriety and recovery related to the career success?
Well, having the focus and the energy to just go for your dreams. I think most of us have dreams, you know, and then we get...
But let's talk specifically about you rather than generally.
Okay.
So what happened? So you decided this is what I'm going to do. And at the same time, you were doing drugs and drinking. And did it go that well?
Well, no. Well, I came here from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. And after I graduated from college, I came right to Los Angeles about 3 months later. And I came here specifically to pursue a music career. I actually ended up getting in SAG and being an actor and probably doing more acting work than singing originally. But then I was doing them both. But I felt like... I needed to stop one because I didn't feel like I was really accomplishing
what you wanted.
Either one, trying to do both. So I stopped the acting, started back pursuing the music. It worked out, and now I'm pursuing both. So the question is, how did
addiction affect your goals?
Well, it sidetracked me. When I am high or drunk, I don't go on a stage.
Right, you don't.
And I don't go on any auditions.
Right.
I don't, you know, I don't have the mindset or the energy.
Mm-hmm. Have you had things booked that you've had to cancel? Or you just don't even?
I just don't even.
You don't even engage
I don't even
in that.
Go for it. I'm yeah. just completely
yeah.
not in it.
Yeah.
You know?
So were you? Did you not really pursue it until you got sober?
I was pursuing it the whole time. I actually did an album with Henry Nemo during a period where I was trying to stay sober and trying to, and using at the same time, but trying to stay sober, mm-hmm. you know, getting 30 days, 5 months, 7 months, 9 months for a 7 year period before I actually got 10 years. Henry Nemo is a famous songwriter from the 40s. Mm-hmm. Henry Nemo wrote songs like Don't Take Your Love From Me, Tis Autumn, mm-hmm. I Let a Song Go Out of My Heart with Duke Ellington. He wrote for Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, even Nat King Cole. Mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra made Don't Take Your Love From Me famous. Nat King Cole recorded right. Tis Autumn.
So you would get... You'd make an album with him.
Yeah, I did an album with him where I sang a few songs on his album mm-hmm. called Mr. Nostalgia and Friends. Mm-hmm. So...
And you were struggling with sobriety. What was that like when you were getting 30 days, 4 months, you know?
I didn't kind of know what I was doing. I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic. Yeah. I never liked the way I felt after getting drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like I would go 3 days just kind of getting cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow, you know, how it goes.
So, and so what changed when you were able to commit to doing it?
Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Energy. You have time. You have time. You have time. You don't have time to go on auditions or time to write a song when you're drunk and high.
Yeah.
There's no time. You need that time to pursue
yeah.
getting drunk.
Some people can.
Sounds so... I think some people... Yeah. I
don't know
it
how.
Must be. Yeah, it must be a horrible to do that.
Yeah.
To be drunk.
Yeah.
Or high.
Yeah.
And go on an audition. Or even to go in an AA meeting.
Yeah.
High or drunk.
Yeah. You never did that?
Never.
Yeah.
I just think that's catatonic. I think that's, I don't even know, I can't even relate to that.
No, I can't either.
You know?
I think, it's not that I'm impressed with people that can do that, but I mean, what a horrible thing to do.
To sit in there and hear yeah. about spirituality and God
yeah.
and know that this is all about not drinking and you're sitting there drunk.
Yeah, I mean, my heart goes out enjoyable? To people like that, you know?
I was a kind of a fun drunk.
You were?
I wanted to laugh and have fun.
Is it, so were you always? What were some of the kind of fun things you did? Did it stay fun?
Socially smoke crack?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. Did it stay fun once the crack was in it? That's a pretty solitary activity.
There's nothing remotely fun about crack.
Yeah, right.
There's nothing fun about crack.
So when you say you were a fun drunk.
Well, drunk when okay. I was drinking, but yeah. after, you know, you want to take it to another level after you get drunk.
Yeah.
You know, there must be another party. There yeah. must be a party after the party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Whoa.
After party.
Yeah.
Where's the after party is what I want to know. And if there's not. Let's just make one.
We're in the after party.
We're in
but
the after
so,
party.
But right? back then, you were going, where's the after party? Oh, okay. And were you doing the drugs alone at the end?
No, I would go to the after hours.
Yeah.
There is an after hours that I discovered. You find what you need.
Yeah, I found some after hours back in the day. I would find them on Hollywood Boulevard. Right oh, near yeah. here, kind of.
Oh, actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's probably the same one I knew about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have tried to hit on you probably if I was in after hours.
You know, when I would go to the, I mean, it was like the den of iniquity. You could do drugs openly.
Upstairs?
Nobody
was
cared.
It a upstairs? Yeah, was it a Thai restaurant?
I don't remember. I don't remember. But so you would go to the after hours and you would do the drugs. And then would you feel horrible?
When it was coke.
Yeah.
It was cocaine.
Yeah.
We would do cocaine.
Yeah.
And... So it hadn't really gotten that bad yet
uh-huh.
with the cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
But you're always, I'm so sensitive, probably because I'm an artist or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm so sensitive. I'm always aware of everything around me. Like, you know, what's he doing and what are they doing? You can't, you're not really enjoying this.
Right.
Because you're too hyper alert of
everyone.
If you're like me, you're just like, if I would talk to people, I would really talk more than them.
Yeah.
But I was assessing them while I was talking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think you're probably that way.
I'm still like that. I don't even get a chance for that. You know?
That's hilarious.
So that's what you were doing.
Yeah, just and talking but observing how they're reacting to my talking a lot.
Yeah.
Making them think I didn't know what I was doing.
Making them think you didn't know what...
Making them think that I was talking and I was really, really into what I was saying. But in reality, I was trying to distract them. Just to observe them. It was some wizard kind of bullshit twisted.
Was it about making sure they liked you? Like trying to control that?
That's interesting that you said that. If I was to like be as honest as I can, I would say that, I wanted them to like me. But I also wanted to know if they were criminal types or if they were there to just have fun.
Uh-huh.
It's just a lot going on in this brain.
Were they usually criminal types?
Well, I mean, you have to factor in if you're doing cocaine with strangers.
Yeah.
The possibilities are open.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. But so your brain is going... I don't know if your brain ever did this, but mine would go, well, okay, they know. Well, not with the people I'm doing it with, but when I was around people who were not doing it with me, oh my God, they know I'm high. They're thinking I'm high. They think I'm such a freak. Oh my God, I am such a freak. Like, did you have that?
Probably all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's easy to have. That's all paranoia. Yeah, that's all paranoia and it's all bullshit mixed in.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's just like, whatever. Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, if I wanted to make myself look good, I would go, no, I didn't do that, Anna. I didn't. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But we're not here to make ourselves look good while we're talking, are we?
I think that alcoholics and addicts care a lot often about looking good, you know, and this, I think what narcissism can be, and I think narcissism is one of the telltale symptoms of alcoholism, our common characteristic among alcoholics, you know, is that narcissism involves not just like I'm thinking about me, but I'm thinking about what you're thinking about me, you know. There's this great line in Beaches, which is an underrated movie, where Bette Midler goes, enough about me, what do you think of me?
yeah,
you know,
that's a funny line.
And that's so kind of what it can be about, again, without sort of trying to connect with something larger than ourselves.
Right. And the principle behind the first step happens to be honesty. And what I think that means is self-honesty.
Yeah.
I mean, it means before I tell you something, I need to actually be honest with myself about what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So I can not be delusional, which is another
common characteristic.
Yes.
Yeah. And how do you know over time in sobriety, do you find yourself more able to be honest with yourself and with others?
Yeah, because I progressively become more aware that, are you being honest right now, Aaron?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be an angel.
Yeah.
But I, you know, there's a lot of progress and a lot of productivity in being honest for some reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So without being self-honest, your life is just a lie, really.
Right.
What you say to people, how you behave, the way you walk, the way you dress. If you are dressing because you think this is what they'll like.
Yeah.
That's delusional.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what someone's gonna like.
Yeah. 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 And it's tough if you sort of fancy yourself a mind reader, which I find many of us do. Right?
Right. Which is... like, delusional once
again.
Yeah,
we think we excel in figuring out what other people are thinking when, like, the truth is, true relief comes from thinking about them, not thinking about what they're thinking about us.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole purpose of what we do in recovery and sponsoring people, you know, getting our minds off of our narcissism.
Right. It says when all else fails, help with another alcoholic is the big deal.
Yeah. So those, so you had 10 years, and then what happened?
You know what? Something really interesting. But I found out this time mm-hmm. that it was alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
But you
started to hate everybody.
Not necessarily hate everybody. It was remote. It was close to that. But what it was tired of everyone suffering from 100 forms of fear.
Yeah.
Right. That's just what we do. That's mm-hmm. a part of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. We suffer from 100 forms of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I would walk into the rooms
mm-hmm.
from 5 to 10 years, I would be like, really, do you want to keep doing this your whole life, Aaron? You just want to go to a meeting every day mm-hmm. for an hour, hour and a half, maybe two mm-hmm. times a day? Is that going to be your
mm-hmm.
deal
mm-hmm.
where everybody's complaining about their lives? Because I was a metaphysical dude. Mm-hmm. I like Louise L. Hay and the Dalai Lama and Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and you know, Conversations with God is
yeah.
my Bible.
Yeah.
Even right now.
Yeah.
So I was into, do you want to be a self-fulfilling prophecy? Do you want to continue to talk about what's negative about your life and then just live that reality?
Right.
So I thought I knew something.
Because that is not my experience in 12-step at all. It's not that people are complaining. At all. I mean, it's all perception. But I think people are, you know, solving.
Yeah, well, we were going to the different meetings.
Yeah. Well, no, not
we
really.
We were going to one same meeting.
And
that
was
knew.
All about solutions.
But
to my mind.
To your mind. Well, you're lucky. And
yeah.
therein lies why you may be
so
still,
far. Yeah.
Still
yeah. Yeah.
clean and sober.
Yeah.
And I
took
only
a break.
Have six. Just over 6 years.
Well, so you started to think that everybody was complaining and everybody was a nightmare and you didn't want to be doing that the rest of your life, right?
Right.
And so you said,
I'm out of here.
This. Yeah.
Fuck this. I'm, you know, and I told my friends that had the same amount of time as me, around 10 years, and mm-hmm. they would go, oh, whatever, dude. You're just, I said, man, I'm telling you, I'm not going back to AA.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I drink, I'm not going to drink that much because I don't care about drinking anymore like I used to.
Right.
It's not that big a deal. It's
yeah.
not like I'm drinking to get drunk.
Yeah.
So I'll drink a quarter of a glass of champagne to hang with my friends
mm-hmm.
at Bird's on Franklin. Do you ever go to Bird's?
Well, I've eaten a lot of chicken there. I never drank there.
Bird's was a great place to go and have fun.
Yeah, people. That's a little alcoholic street, that little strip, right?
Well.
Lots of places to drink right there.
Yeah.
So what happened with your idea about having just a quarter of a glass of champagne? How quickly did that dissolve?
Well, in 3 days, it went to a half a glass, and in a week, a glass. In 2 weeks, two glasses. In a month, a bottle. And in 2 months, two bottles. And then in 2 months, I got tired of champagne, and I started drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
In 3 months, 4 months more beer, got tired of beer. I drank whiskey 5 months, whiskey 6 months. Well, that's when I found the after hours. It was the proper time.
Yeah.
6 months, 6-7 months. After hours, cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I needed to socially smoke crack, I did.
You did. So how aware were you that maybe this had not been a good idea and that maybe to leave and maybe there was a problem? Were you aware of that while this was happening, or were you like, no, I'm handling this?
I had graduated to writing as opposed to fearless, because my sponsor had me from 2 years to like 5 years write my fears as a 10-step.
Mm-hmm.
Every thought that I had that was a fear,
mm-hmm.
I would write God at the top of the page and write, I have fear that, blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
in a whole page
mm-hmm.
or whatever in the day I'm in,
mm-hmm.
and then write, God, please remove these fears. I did that for 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. While you were drinking?
No, when I was sober,
while
I was sober. So at 5 years, I had an emotional breakdown
mm-hmm.
because I'm sponsoring guys. I'm writing gratitude lists. I'm meditating. I'm
mm-hmm.
doing all this, and I still didn't think my life was moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So at 5 years, I started not liking AA as much.
And but so during those years that you were out, how aware were you that...
I was only out for 9 months.
Okay, yeah, sorry. So during
yeah.
those 9 months, were you like, oh, this is not working?
No, I got a DUI.
So you thought it was working until you got the DUI?
At about 7, 8, 9 months, I started realizing
that you were not socially smoking crack anymore. And so was it hard to come back?
This is a very intimate story that happened.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. You just keep it vague then.
I witnessed something with police officers that was a straight out clear sign that I needed to go back.
Okay.
And I did the next day.
Right.
It was a DUI, but what happened was completely over and above
the normal DUI.
The call of duty.
Right.
Like they pulled guns out.
Because I feel like I know this story a little bit. Like they chased you? Like ran from them?
No, it wasn't the police that I ran from. I took a leak on Santa Monica and Highland at 6 in the morning after leaving that infamous after hours that I told you about.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one was there, or at least I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lady in the car next to mine in the passenger seat.
You pulled over to park.
I pulled over and I went between two cars against the wall.
Yeah.
And I looked around, but I was still slightly buzzed, so I guess I wasn't observant enough.
Yeah.
And she got out of the car and went ballistic.
Yeah.
You would have thought I braked her or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that's horrible to say. I would never do something like
obviously.
That.
Okay.
Obviously. Obviously. But I said, ma'am, I didn't see you. And she was like, speaking sound like in a foreign language, because she was like,
right.
I was like, I didn't see you.
Right.
So by that time, some security guards came out of the building because they heard the commotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, oh, cool, these guys are coming. I'll just tell them this lady is overreacting. So I rolled my window down. And as soon as I rolled the window down, they pepper sprayed me.
Oh, wow.
With some cayenne pepper.
Right.
I rolled the window back up and took off.
Okay.
They chased me in their truck.
Right.
Now I'm being chased by two maniac Hispanic
security guards,
wannabe cops.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is absolute bullshit. They got sticks.
Yeah.
They want to kill me.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I'm about to die because I took a leak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a little mini mall.
Yeah.
And so at some point, I said, this is complete and utter bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going home. But by the time I made that decision, the police were behind them, and they were behind me. Mm-hmm. Like out of some Barney Fife, you know, like Andy Griffith show or something.
Right, right.
So I just go in my driveway.
Yeah.
A friend of ours is my neighbor.
I know that. So I know where I can picture your driveway because I've been to her place many times.
Yeah. So thank God I didn't say her name.
Yeah.
I was good.
Oh, she writes. She's like one of the main writers for the site. So you
well, but
say
you
her
just
name.
Don't. You don't want to say that.
Okay,
don't.
She doesn't care. Go on.
Okay, so anyway, so I go. The police jump out of the cars and they got guns out.
Wow.
And I'm what? And so they say, get on the ground. And I go, no, I'm not getting on the ground. I'm going to my house. I was pepper sprayed unnecessarily. You don't know what happened. I don't know what you have guns out for. I'm going to my house. And I went in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend at the time was there. And it was 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
She wake up to police officers all around the building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of them told her that I had hit people and killed people. And it was horrendous. Her knees buckled.
Yeah.
And she just thought, oh, he's gone for life.
Yeah.
Right? None of that was true.
Yeah.
So she talked me into going out because it would be worse. And I went out.
Yeah.
And they gave me the so-called test, you know, touch your nose.
Yeah.
Stand on one foot. They said, Mr. Akins, you passed that, but we have to take you in to get a breathalyzer.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, but we're going to take you to the hospital and get your eyes flushed out first.
Okay.
Because I told them, look, I am a professional. I am an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
I told them all. I was like,
play at the House of Blues.
I do all this. I had on like $1,000 boots.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I'm like, but they knew. They knew that I wasn't just a scumbag.
Yeah.
So I went out, blah, blah, blah. I went to the hospital for a couple hours, which probably made my blood level go not be as high.
Yeah.
Because I blew a 0.11.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't really go to jail, but I had to stay in the holding tank for like 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was enough for me to go, alrighty then.
Yeah.
You have to go back to AA.
Yeah.
You have to go back to AA, my friend.
And we need to wrap up, but how is it different?
How is it different now?
Yeah.
Oh my God. How is AA different now?
Yeah.
What's different now, and that's a brilliant question.
Thank you.
Is that I have learned to listen, but not only with this warped mind, but with a power.
Yeah, like we started with.
Like we started with. This is full circle. It's a brilliant way to end.
Yeah.
I read with the power. I read the big book with the power. Matter of fact, I read all my books with the power.
Yeah.
And I try to talk to this power. Here's one of the most important things, but I have several that I learned this time as opposed to last time, is that I need a relationship with this power.
Mm-hmm.
Because this program is only based on a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual maintenance.
Yeah.
So I need a relationship, not just like if you and I know you a little better just because you and I have just talked.
Yeah.
A little bit more than normal.
Than we have, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I know a little bit more about you.
Yeah.
And if we continue to talk, I'll know even more. I'll know how you respond to questions, how you ask questions, how you respond to questions.
Right.
That's the way God operates.
Right.
I have to ask God. I have to listen to God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't think I know how he's going to respond.
Yeah.
What's good for you may not be what he wants for me.
Yeah.
It's a very unique relationship.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest things that I learned is to have a relationship. There are some other big ones. We probably don't have time to go.
But that's an awesome note to end on. So Aaron, thank you so much for coming in to do this. It's been fun. We now know each other better.
We know each other better, and that's a good
thing. And the listeners now know you too.
That's a good thing
for me. All right, so that was Aaron Akins. This was After Party Pod. Subscribe, find us on iTunes, SoundCloud. Come to the site, After Party Chat. You can get it there, and you can get a lot more. So thanks so much for listening. See you next time.